everyone, and welcome to Total Football Debate episode 53, the first of what we can call season two, I guess. And what a throwback. It's like we've started all again, because it's just myself and Jace this time. The last time you would have heard from us both on the same show was, well, just over a month ago, on the 8th of June, episode 52 came out. Since then, you've had a couple of kids run riot with Jace on the bonus episode that we had. But we're back for season two. And, well, it won't just be me and Jace all the time moving forward. But obviously, it's early days, so we're just going to get things going. And today is simply a discussion, a bit of a back and forth as to how we feel the transfer window has gone so far in preparation for the first Premier League game at the beginning of August, which, funny enough, happens to be Crystal Palace Arsenal on a Friday night. So, Jace, how are you?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Good to be back.
So how we're going to do this is we're going to do our top 20, from 20 being worst case, and obviously all the way up to number one for who we feel has been, well, who we feel is the most complete. Doesn't necessarily have to be who the biggest spenders are. It could be who's bought even one or two players that have literally plugged every gap they needed. So that's how we're going to work today. But we're going to start at the bottom. And me and Jace will work our way up and see how we match up. Jace, are you good with that explanation? Just to make sure?
Yeah, I am indeed.
Cool, we're on the same page so far then.
Roughly how I put mine, but yeah, we'll see.
Okay. So, as I said, starting at the bottom.
Oh, lovely.
Now, I put a team at the bottom on the simple basis that they haven't done anything. I didn't feel it was kind of, I don't feel it's kind of fair to put them anywhere else, because at the end of the day, they haven't done anything. They've not improved. And yeah, I guess they've got a lot of potential exits on the card, but I've not heard anything regarding inbound transfers, which worries me a little bit, because you think with 2 weeks left to go till the season starts, if said exits do happen, what are they going to do? So my number 20, just to kind of paint that picture, Jace, and it'd be interesting to see where you've gone, because I'd like to know where you put this team based on that reason, is Leicester.
Oh, well, we weren't far off.
Okay. So who's your 20th then?
Manchester United.
Ooh. Now, do you know what? I won't say where the other places are, or where the other clubs are, because we'll get to that. But let's just say we're not far off.
I think Leicester will be an interesting watch next year, as in not as a positive, but I do think you look at the likes of Forest, you look at the likes of Palaces, maybe Leeds, if their signings that they've brought in kick on. I think Leicester could be dark horses for a potential struggle next season. Lookman is another name that just runs to mind. They had him on loan. Doesn't look like they're going to exercise their right option to buy him. I mean, there's talk.
And he was an important player last season to an extent. And that's the problem, I think.
Well, here's the other thing. There's talk that the agreed buyback clause was 14 or 15 million quid. But there's talk they've got to sell and make space before even contemplating that kind of signing. So,
well, this is kind of my reasoning. Now, look, this table, you know, Leicester being 20th doesn't mean I think Leicester are going to finish 20th. By no means is that anywhere near where I think they're going to finish. Do I think they could be in a little bit more trouble this season? Yes. Does that put them at risk? Probably not. I'm 80, 90% confident it won't. But Leicester have made no transfers. Therefore, their window so far is stagnant. You know, they've not brought anyone in. At the same time, they've not let anyone go. But if someone said, what do you think is going to happen with Leicester in the transfer window? I guarantee you it's going to be about exits first. And we're not just talking about any exits. we're talking about the potential exits of two of their most influential players, Tielemans, Maddison. Who have you heard they're replacing them with if they go?
No.
I've not heard anything. So, I mean, I don't know what the Tielemans situation is going to be. You know, there's Arsenal, you've got potentially Man United, and we'll come on to them in a moment. You've got Tottenham even. I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, you're hearing Leicester might go for Harry Winks. I mean, I personally would have said at the time with what Leicester already have, that Leicester are already sort of even too good for him. I would have thought he might have gone in at Everton or something like that, personally. And that concerns me. So I can't put them anywhere. There was another team with Leicester until today, because they also hadn't made any transfers. Something came out today. It was confirmed. Therefore, that changes where they are. So Leicester are the only team that currently have made no business whatsoever other than losing Ademola Lookman on loan. And when he was starting to play as many games as he did for Leicester and he's gone and they couldn't buy him for 14 million, that worries me massively. So Leicester are my bottom team. Now, interestingly enough, you put Man United bottom. Now, what is your thoughts on that? I won't give my thoughts until I get to Man United in my position.
Thoughts on that are quite simple. New manager came in, was clear who he wanted. This whole, and I get we don't know the full story because it's a tricky situation, but their whole transfer window, apart from, you know, the one player they said, Malachi, they signed from Feyenoord towards the end of last week, their whole window, and I don't care who you are, club like Manchester United, as big as they are, new chief executive in, big window because they've released about 12 players, your whole transfer window cannot be dominated by one player. Now, I get there's politics from the Barcelona owner because their situation. I get there's politics from Frankie de Jong's camp because of his contract situation. And I get Manchester United have their stance. But the problem as I see it now is he's become such a public vocal point to their transfer window. If this does not happen, it will be an utter embarrassment, I think, on Man United's part. Secondly, if he does come, by the sounds of it, he wants a solution to stay at Barcelona. So if he does go, it's only because he's been forced to. Do Man United need that kind of player?
Well, we're hearing today he is going to stay.
I mean, they need...
I think it's a fair point.
They need at least a handful of signings. At least. You know, Pogba's gone out, Lingard's gone out. I mean, there's rumours that their full back option could be Tielemans, could be Ruben Neves, which on paper, okay, may not be too bad. But you're talking about Man United here. And it's just embarrassing. I mean, look, we don't know the full story, but if Man United have got this far into the window and Frankie de Jong genuinely has no desire to move, that should have been muted ages ago, pre-summer. Yes, you can't tap up players. I'm not caveating that. But you can speak to their agents at certain points in the season and sound out the likelihood of a move.
Well, the other issue we've got, and it'd be interesting to gauge your thoughts quickly on this before we move on to position 19, is, you know, you currently have Man United 20th without the potential exit of Cristiano Ronaldo. And that looks like it could be happening as well. Obviously, we don't know the logistics behind all that because apparently there's said family issues and personal reasons. Now, this is now what, the second or third time he's voiced he wants to leave Man United, and he obviously joined on the basis, and this is what concerns me more, and I'll talk about this in my part, but he clearly joined on the basis that he thought Man United were going somewhere last season. And he said, I'm not willing to stay around, pretty much bluntly, to fight for sixth spot, etc. I'm here to, you know, in the final latter stages of my career, win things. So it makes me think that also promises were broken. I'll give my thoughts when it comes back round to where I think Man United will finish. And let's just say it won't take very long. as to where they are in my league table. 19th spot. Who have you got? Because obviously I went first last time. So who have you got in 19th?
Bournemouth.
Correct. Same.
For any reason, they haven't done a lot. I don't think they're Premier League ready. And yeah, that's about it, really.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm exactly the same. I saw their incomings and, you know, whilst I don't feel some other clubs' incomings at the bottom are worthy or up to standard, at least they're trying. Two free transfers from Bournemouth for me is just not cutting it. 18th spot, and I am at said club, Manchester United. Now,
I had
just to... Did you? Okay, so which is cool. So at least we've kind of ticked them three clubs off. Just quickly, my thoughts on Man United, other than what you've already echoed. You know, the Feyenoord boy cannot be your only signing when you've just lost Emmanuel Matic, Paul Pogba, Cavani, Lingard, Mata, and potentially you're going to lose Cristiano Ronaldo, and you haven't even got any kind of inkling as to what's going to happen next. I mean, these aren't just players that, you know, fizzled out. Yeah, Mata maybe played a handful with that, but he was a dressing room guy at best. But it's the fact that Cavani was still featuring regularly. Lingard, you know, came on a few times and turned it up. Pogba, I mean, this guy they bought twice for nearly however many millions, and both times he's gone on a free. Nemanja Matic, again, another experienced member of the squad. Dean Henderson's gone out on loan to Forest, which, to be fair, is a good move for him and for Forest. I get it that, you know, maybe we're going to see the first real signs of Anthony Martial under Ten Hag. I mean, that is a possibility. So there's a chance that maybe that is Cavani or Lingard's kind of stand-in. But the fact that their centre midfield is still with McTominay, Bruno Fernandes and Fred is a big problem.
Massive.
And they haven't solved the defensive issue either. I mean, Varane now, last season, looks like an absolute shamble of a signing. You've got the Maguire captaincy. Obviously, we could only judge it on today. And, you know, maybe it was masked a little bit. When you're starting to see, however, other clubs around them now making moves, it gets a little bit worrying for them. But we'll see. But currently, yeah, they're my 18th. And obviously, you've already spoken about Leicester and what you think of their business or lack of. 17th spot.
Everton.
Who have you got?
Everton. Ooh.
Okay. Interesting. My 17th spot is Wolves.
Oh, well, might as well nip this in the... But I've got them in 16th.
Okay, so we'll talk about Wolves then, because then at least that way it kind of... No, we'll talk about Wolves now. You chose Everton first. Go on.
So Everton was pure on the basis, apart from Tarkovsky. They've not done anything. They've sold Richarlison. Talks are ongoing about, you know, they need new ownership before getting new funds. Again, I wouldn't be surprised if their actual position in my transfer table isn't too dissimilar to where they actually finish. Simple as that.
Yeah, the financial fair play issue as well. You know, I think they've made a bit of a... they've given us a bit of an indication as to where they are. When they sold Richarlison, you thought, oh, OK, who are you going to bring in to be his? And they gave Gordon his number 10 shirt. Yeah, that. I mean, I wasn't overly convinced when we were linked with Gordon, to be honest. And I'm glad that ended up just being a bit of a... not that I'm saying he hasn't got it, because he might do. But I'm just, yeah, I'm not sold on anyone's value at Everton other than potentially Richarlison. And even that I wasn't 100% on. We'll talk about that when it gets to Spurs. But Everton are in a bit of a... They're in a really precarious position. Funny enough, we've been banging on for years about James Tarkowski being an Everton signing, and the fact that they've still signed him when he's on a free agent says a lot. He's another Michael Keane for me. Just doesn't show anything. And I honestly think they will be towards the bottom, to be completely honest with you. Yeah, no sign of any incomings, and all their big players are losing value every day. It looks like Calvert-Lewin's just gone. I wouldn't be surprised. Calvert-Lewin's nowhere near that England squad in come the summer, and he was borderline number two at one point. No. Wolves then. So I've got them at 17th. You've got them at 16th, so we can kind of tie that in. Again, really, echoing the Everton point more than anything.
They bought Nathan Collins. That got confirmed today or last night.
£22 million from Burnley, Jace.
But here's the thing with Wolves. Now, I said this a couple of times last season. I said from about March time last season, I think next year Wolves are the ones to watch for relegation scrap. And I think they'll be that. Because they don't have any money and they do have to sell to buy. Now, they've just signed, as you say there, Nathan Collins for 18 to 20 million quid. Adama Traore has been muted as being available for around 10 to 12 million quid. I mean, how drastically is his valuation dropped from a £40 million Spurs target last summer, now down to 10 to 12 million? They're in big trouble. And agent Neves...
Not even last summer, it was January.
January. You know, Ruben Neves muted as a potential in at United if they can't get hold of Tillemans or Frankie de Jong.
Well, he's... Ruben Neves certainly isn't a £60 million player anymore.
No. So, I think Wolves are in deep, deep trouble. I really, really do. Because I don't see them... They struggled last season for goals. Defensively, Nathan Collins isn't the answer, and I think they're pretty average. And obviously they came up, they were in touch and distance of getting European football, then dived off a cliff. I just think they're in big, big trouble.
Well, I mean, they've lost Trincão, he's gone back on loan.
Fabio Silva's gone out, big money signing dropped.
You've got Roman Staes and Marcel, who were their centre, were up in the back line for them. They've gone on free transfers. Huang, they've tied down. I rate the guy. I think he's a good player. I think Neto coming back is going to be good. Podence will be okay. Ruben Neves, if he stays, will be okay. It's where they're at in holding mid and back line that concerns me. And yeah, when you start signing big money players from Burnley, I mean, the fact that Burnley got 22 million when they got relegated blows my mind a little bit, to be honest. And I think they've kind of done Wolves out there, because I'm not convinced that's, you know, the money you should be spending on what, a 21-year-old who's not, I don't know, doesn't, I mean, they need players right now, personally. I think by the time Nathan Collins sort of comes to fruition with his potential, if he's got it, Wolves could be down. I don't know.
Yeah, agree.
So yeah, I'm not overly confident with Wolves right now. My 16th spot. I've got to be honest. I was humming and ahhing over this, but I'm not convinced by their business so far. It's Fulham.
Oh, again, we're not far out. Not far out.
So I've got Fulham in 16th. It was very close between, you know, the two teams above them. Well, the one for sure above them. Personally, I'm not convinced Pereira of Man United's the type of... He, to me, didn't really show anything
I think it's a bit of a vanity signing on Fulham's part. Take a fringe player from a big club and hope to turn him into a gem.
Paulinho could be an interesting one from Sporting. You know, he's not a bad player. Seems to be, you know, reasonably valued on transfer market anyway. I think that's an untapped league, to be honest. When you look at Benfica, Porto and Sporting, you can pick up some solid players there. He's 27, so he's, you know, got lots of experience. He it's not a bad signing, fair play. But obviously they lost, you know, Carvalho to Liverpool, who was their sort of up and coming. I just think, and I said this earlier, you know, maybe if Fulham had a squad like Wolves or whatever, I probably would have been actually like, yeah, fair enough, not bad. I just think the teams like Fulham and your Bournemouth, they've just got to do more. Otherwise, I think, honestly, at this moment in time, Fulham are no better than the teams that came up last year, like your Norwiches. And I'm just not convinced. We've seen it time and time again that Mitrovic and whatnot never really cuts it in the Premier League. So, you know, it's like they're going for round five in the Premier League with the same squad that didn't cut it the previous three or four times. So, yeah, they're my 16th spot. You said Wolves were your 16th, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so who's your 15th?
Brighton. Oof. Purely on the basis, I looked at their signs, they've bought three in. As I understand it, it's meant to be clever recruitment, so it's not necessarily to immediately, you know, facilitate the first team, but obviously they've lost Pesuma, so I don't see a ready-made replacement in what they've done so far there. And again, for all the plaudits they got at the beginning of the season, they did tail off and drop off, and that whole adage of goal scoring again versus defence. So, as I say, neither here nor there, but they've got to replace Pesuma, and they haven't in my book. Some would argue otherwise and say they've already got a couple of ready-made replacements based on recruitment they did over the last couple of years. They're ready to break through, but when you lose a big money player like that, you've got to, you know, do something. So that's why they're there.
No, I think that's a fair point. We had this back and forward with a Brighton fan who tried telling us that, you know, they made recruitment last year and they're coming back on loan from loan now and they're ready. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, not that I'm being, you know, pretentious by saying, oh, because I don't know who those players are, they're not going to be good. But you're absolutely right. When you're losing a key man like Pesuma and you're not replacing him, really. I mean, and Wepu might step up because I do rate the guy. But at this moment in time, this window has... what they've lost is bigger than what they've gained, personally. And they're close to potentially, you know, we don't know in the next couple of weeks if they're going to lose Cucurella as well. He looks like he might hang on. So I completely get it. My 15th is Everton. For reasons you've already mentioned, you can't be bringing in a free transfer, James Karkowski, and no one else when you've just lost Richarlison, who is your be-all, end-all. So, yeah, don't need to elaborate on that. And funny enough, my 14th spot was Brighton.
Ah, well, my 14th spot, because we've already covered them, was Fulham. So not much in it, but just...
We're doing well.
Just for the same reasons as you, really.
Yep. So, well, so far we've covered pretty much everyone. We're there. Now it gets interesting. Because my 13th spot could be a little bit controversial.
Oh.
However, my 13th spot may change within a week. Because if said B does happen for them and the players that they're now linked with do start happening, fair's fair. And they were lucky to be 13th because it is the team that...
13th. So far, because, what you said is that my reasoning behind them being there. But if X, Y, and Z happens...
Well, they weren't going to be there today. Okay. They were actually going to be 19th with Leicester. But today they confirmed a transfer, which for me bumps them right up the table.
Go on.
But not quite enough. So my 13th spot is Chelsea.
Exactly the same.
How weird is that?
And the only reason I put them there is because obviously Sterling's come in. Then they were
linked to Koulibaly. The big one.
Now they've been linked
and
with
now they're linked Kimpembe. Kimpembe.
And then they're being linked with another centre back. They're basically going after three centre backs. So good.
Well, Nathan Ake.
Yeah, that's the other one.
He's going to come in. Until today, I was worried. Well, I wasn't, obviously, but I was at the same time from a neutral's perspective. I personally think a lot of clubs, I know they're, you know, Man United wouldn't have been able to do it. I think a lot of clubs have missed out on this Sterling deal.
100%. My God, me and Cookie, context for viewers, had this debate at the end of the season about Sterling and where he's at. He's a top, top player. He's world class. Cookie will scream to the rooftops he's overrated. Look, at he's one of the most productive wingers in European football, who, at still such a young age, has won how many trophies?
I personally think Man City are slightly, you know, although they're still falling back on some great players, I think they're weaker without him. Because, as you say, he gives them an element of dynamism that a lot of clubs would love to have. I think he's well, from what I remember of Chelsea's wingers, I think he will now be their best winger. Chelsea, for me, I don't know where they're going next season in regards to the striking position. I think that is something that needs fixing quick. Sterling is a great signing. I think he's better than Ziyech. He's better than Pulisic right now. He's, you know, obviously head and shoulders above Havertz and Hudson-Odoi and all of them. So you can't say he's not an improvement. Then bringing in Kimpembe potentially. And Cookie said he doesn't think Chelsea have got a plan with Koulibaly. I mean, it depends on what you think the plan is. Because if you're trying to bring in players that have experience to hold that club at where they're at, if you said to me, would you rather sign Koulibaly for what he's got now or Ben White, I'd have rather had Koulibaly all day long. Well, because I know what I'm getting from him.
Here's the thing, right? I'm a bit... it is big money. It is big money for a 31.
It's 30 million for a 30-year-old.
And it's a massive contract because it's a 5-year contract or a 4-year and a plus one. So it is massive money. But if you look at it from the Chelsea owner's perspective, he's come in, the club are a mess. There's a lot of instability and stuff. And I think he's just come in and he's getting a lot of good press about face-to-face and being quite... But I think if you're him, he's coming in to prove a point because there was a lot of people sceptical about him. Oh, he thinks this is Football Manager. He's just coming in and he's doing whatever. But I think he's come in to genuinely give Chelsea immediate success. And whilst I don't agree that in terms of financial value on paper and age, that Koulibaly is a good deal, at the end of the day, if I'm a Chelsea fan and I put myself in a Chelsea fan's shoes, do I give a shit? It's not my money. It's the Chelsea owner's money. And if he wants to bring in immediate success, I get Koulibaly's age. I get he's had a couple of questionable injuries. So, you know, it could blow up in their face. But Koulibaly, for the last 5 or 6 years, has been one of the most consistent players in Europe at Napoli. In Serie A, he would be playing until he's 34, 35, 36. You've only got to look at Chiellini and Bonucci. You're telling me that if you're one of the big four clubs and Chiellini became available, you wouldn't take a punt on him for a year at the age of 36. Same goes for Koulibaly. He's strong, he's powerful, he's quick, he's good with the ball at his feet. Like, he's learnt his trade in Italy. It's...
Well, Cookie said he's past his best, been in Italy most of his career. Since when has being in Italy most of his career a negative for a defender? I mean, if I had to be buying a defender and I had to choose which two leagues they've been playing in, I would want them to have played as a defender in both the Premier League and Serie A. Because the pace of the game, you need to understand in the Premier League. But there's no league better for developing centre-backs than Serie A. I don't care what anyone says.
Well, you're telling me that Chelsea go into the season with a back three of, let's say, Ake,
Kimpembe.
Kimpembe,
it'll be Kimpembe, Koulibaly and Ake, and then Thiago Silva as a backup.
And then if you want, you've got younger centre-backs that were coming through as well. So look, if it was my money, yeah, I'd be bothered. But I've never... Chelsea owner is obviously doing it for immediate success. And at the end of the day, it's not my money. If I'm a Chelsea fan, I'm happy. That's all I've got to say about that.
Well, let me just say, if Chelsea signed Koulibaly and Kimpembe tomorrow, they would easily be in the top half.
My only qualm with Chelsea, and I said this last year with Lukaku and the manager, and obviously they've decided manager stays, Lukaku goes, it still baffles me. And I think this is what will cost them winning the league or coming top two or three, is this obsession with Tuchel of not having a natural centre forward. I don't, and I think unfortunately, the Premier League, like Sterling will add goals and he's got experience and stuff, but they've got no plan B up front. They're all very similar profile players, light, dynamic, quick, pace, which is brilliant. But I think a lot of teams will be pretty comfortable playing against that, to be honest. That's quite an easy nut to crack because you've just got to do low blocks. You know,
it's
quite easy to play against. If you've got Lukaku as a plan B, then, you know, obvious reasons or a target man, it's different. But I think that's the only difference between them, you know, in terms of the transfer window, winning the transfer window. But again, they've obviously chosen Tuchel's style. That's how he wants to play. But I do think eventually, as I said last season, that is what will catch up with him. His lack of, or his reluctance to use an actual centre-forward in his system.
The other issue with Chelsea is, again, we're going into another season where I am massively concerned with their creativity in centre midfield. I don't buy Jorginho. I don't buy Kovacic. Kante's another year older. Yes, I think Mason Mount's good enough, but he needs others around him. And I'm not convinced that Jorginho and Kovacic are the ones, and they need to address that to be, in my opinion, up there with the other teams. Because this is the first season in a while where I think Chelsea are at massive risk of dropping out the top four. So they need to change that ASAP. Right, we're getting into this cluster then of what seems to be between, you know, 12th and 8th, always a bit of an unusual one where it's like, ooh, you know, these teams are all right. They're doing okay, but they're not great. Who's your 12th position?
Palace.
Oh, interesting. I'm surprised. I'm not going to lie. I am massively surprised by that. My 12th is Southampton.
Oh, again, we're literally within two places.
Mm. I am really intrigued to know why you think Palace are 12th.
Not because I don't think, not a negative. I just think they've got a little bit of work to do, maybe more than they anticipated. And again, this is purely based on so business they've brought in so far. Ibuyi from Derby, which by all accounts, he's not going to go out on loan. They want him in the fringes of the first team. He's going to be a cracking sign and a great prospect for the future. He's meant to be Zaha V2. Sam Johnston on a free transfer West Brom, I think is an absolutely amazing piece of business on our part. Quality recruitment again, given that Guita is in the last year of his contract. And I am very, very excited by Cheick Doucouré. I think that could be one of the signings of the summer. Big, big signing. There to play the Kiate role, which, you know, probably what before Kiate and Gallagher leaving, Vieira wanted two midfielders in, and we've lost both Kiate and Gallagher. So we've got one in. We need two centre mids. Now, by all accounts, if you believe the speculation with the midfielders we have been linked with, we were linked with Aribo. He's gone to Southampton. We were linked with, well, pretty much a done deal for Flynn Downes from Swansea, which would have been a brilliant piece of business. But then West Ham came and swooped in last minute. And O'Brien from Huddersfield, I believe, was also touted at one point or another. And if you believe the speculation, then he is on the verge of signing elsewhere as well. So, look, it's not saying they've done badly, but we needed two midfielders before Kiate left on a free, you know, before his contract left. He did leave because we thought he was going to sign another one. So now that leaves us needing three midfielders and we've got one down and two to go. So no slight on Palace. And I still think it's worth noting that Dougie Friedman, given the task last summer with an unknown entity as Vieira as manager, has completed that rebuild with circa £85 million. Look, he's not done a bad job, but we all know that midfield is probably the single most important positions to fill in that team. So They would have been a little bit higher had maybe Flynn Downs signed for Palace and not West Ham, but he hasn't. And we need two more midfielders. So for that reason, I've put them in 12.
That's interesting because they're not anywhere near 12 for me. So that'll be interesting to see your thoughts on that. My 12th was, as I mentioned, Southampton. Bit of an odd one with Southampton because I can't say they've done anything massive personally. And trust me, 12th is very generous when it comes to league positions for Southampton, because if we were talking about a league position for prediction next season, they would be one of those clubs that are teetering on going down for me. However, they've not lost James Ward-Prowse yet, which for me, as long as they keep him, I think they're in safe hands. I do think Joe Aribo is a good sign-in from Rangers. I do think he'll add something. They brought in two players from the Man City under-23s and another one from Bochum, who I don't know anything about.
He's meant to be really, really good. Palace tracked him for 2 years.
It's one of those that, just because they're not buying massive players that I know of, doesn't necessarily mean they're not going about their business. At the end of the day, you know, they've spent 39 million, which for Southampton, bearing in mind they've not sold anyone, is not bad going. Whether it adds enough depth to their squad, I can't say it does, but as long as there's no outgoings, they're only improving, which is a lot more than any other teams are doing. So at the moment, yeah, people might say, how can you have Southampton 12th and Brighton 14th or Everton 15th? If Southampton lost James Ward-Prowse tomorrow, trust me, they would be battling Wolves in 17th spot. But they haven't. Brighton lost Bissouma, Everton lost Richarlison. That's the difference for me. So Southampton are my 12th and Palace are your 12th. 11th spot, I've got, and this was a hard one, because whilst I'm very impressed with their signings, the outgoings are massive. I've got Leeds in 11th.
Spot on. Same for me. Massive outgoings. They have signed a number of incomings, but I don't know really who they are. So it could be a case of genius, or it could be a case of absolute disaster.
Well, I know Tyler Adams, and I rate the guy. I think he's very good. American boy that Leipzig bought. He has had injury issues, which kept him out of the side for Leipzig. But I know that Leipzig fans were very excited when he was coming back, but he just couldn't force his way back into the team. Anyone that is signing players from Salzburg, in my opinion, has their scouting hat on. And to be buying them two for 41 million, I'm assuming Aronson is a baller. Quite a lot of money, I will say, for someone that's playing at Salzburg, but that may have been because Leipzig had some kind of pull over that and they needed to get him through the door. I don't know. Rocker, I know of at Bayern Munich. He's a decent little player. They seem to just have a bit of a plan, Leeds. And, you know, I can't argue, you know, that they're not trying. I like where the manager's going with, you know, with the avenues that he's going down with the signings, because the clubs that they bought from, Leipzig, Salzburg, Feyenoord, all very well known for their younger talents. So I have a feeling that any one of those four could be fantastic next season. But there's no denying that Rafinha, as of today, has gone, and Calvin Phillips are, well, if there was two of three players that you didn't want Leeds to lose, it was they were two of them for sure. Probably the two most important, to be completely honest with you. So they've got a lot of work to do. And we'll see. Rafinha is a big loss, but they've now got nearly 100 million from those two sales. Let's see whether they do anything big with that money. Because I do think they need to certainly replace Rafinha. Tyler Adams could step in for Calvin Phillips if he can avoid injuries. We're in the top half now. So who's your 10th spot?
10th, I had, so I said it was close. I had Palace 12th, Leeds 11th, and in 10th, I've got Southampton.
Cool. Okay, and your reasons for Southampton?
It's a bit of a risky strategy. They obviously they're trying to mop up the best of the young talent around the country, but naivety of youth, it could be a stroke of genius, or for a club like Southampton, it could go downhill very quickly if results don't. We all know what happened with Hasenhüttl last season and the season before and the season before that. So it's all well and good mopping up the best of the youth, but have they got the know-how and the mindset if they lose 6-0 to get their head round it and not go on a bad run of form? That I'm not so sure. So I've put them in 10th because their strategy is admirable, but it's a risky one.
It's interesting because you put them in 10th and their strategy is borderline 50-50.
Yeah, no coincidence. It's about, if it comes off as genius, if it doesn't, it could be a disaster.
They're gone. Yeah, they could be. Well, they might not be gone. I think it's a good time to do that strategy because they might just again be in a league with teams worse than them. 10th spot for me is West Ham.
Okay.
Look, with West Ham, I guess that could be deemed a bit too harsh because it could have been a season that they lost thinking about it. Big players, Declan Rice, Jared Bowen. Any other season, any other West Ham United, and I think they would have lost them. Surprised, actually. I am actually very surprised that Jared Bowen and Declan Rice are still there. Whether that changes in the coming weeks with Chelsea and Rice, I don't know. But I had it nailed on that Declan Rice would have been part of that Chelsea midfield this season. I would have probably been, you know, quite comfortable to have put a bit of money on that. Still not happened. Jared Bowen, I thought maybe if the Diaz transfer didn't happen in January, I thought was going to be a Liverpool target when Mane went. Clearly, they don't feel that's necessary. I thought there could have been clubs around them that might have touted him. But he's the star man there. They've spent borderline 32 million on a player from Rennes. Who I hear good things about. You know, he's touted as quite a promising prospect. Areola's a good signing from PSG. By all means, not a bad window. Could it be better? Yes, especially if they want to push for that top six spot. I think they're being left behind a bit again by clubs around them, considering they're chasing Arsenal and Spurs. Yeah, could have just maybe pushed a little bit harder, but there's still time. So far, they're bang in the middle. Your next position?
So 9th, I've gone Newcastle. Just because, I mean, on paper, they've, you know, Botman from Lille was the headline. Pope was a bit of a bargain, and I'm surprised not many more were in for Pope, to be fair. A la West Ham, as you mentioned. And they obviously turned the Matt Taggart deal into a permanent. So really and truly, it's two signings. I know they've brought in a couple of relative unknowns from Kilmarnock and Galway, by the way, no disrespect to those. But the headline there is Botman and then Pope. So a couple of decent signings. Have they, again, people buying into the hype that they're going to get top four, top six? I think probably 9th is where they ironically finish as well. I don't think they're going to... They're not going to break top six. They're just not. It's even if they bring in the couple of players they've been linked with between now and the end of the window for attack and striker, Eddie Howe is not going to get them breaking top six. I'm sorry. I don't buy into that hype whatsoever. You know, I think they'll finish best case 7th, 8th, maybe get a good cup run, but they're not going to break top six. They don't have the revenue. I mean, in terms of... They do have the revenue, but in terms of where they're at now, at the beginning of their FFP cycle, they don't. They're just not. So 9th is fair. Taggart was already there, so it's really one sign. And Botman, I think, will be a good signing. But, you know, again, as you mentioned earlier, the Premier League is quick. And in the French League, now and again, he'd get shown up for lack of pace. So I think dominance-wise could be good, but he's got to get to the rigours of the Premier League, and Pope is Pope. But a bit of a weird signing, if I'm honest, for me, because in Dubravka, they already had a decent goalkeeper. So I can't imagine he'll be happy. He's playing the second fiddle. So interesting one. But yeah, ninth for them.
No, fair. It was honestly a really, really difficult one, this one, as to who I put.
Can I just say, so far, the furthest me and you have been apart in terms of places is three, and the West Ham one.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a hint that one of them's quite far, based on one of yours, because I've had a bit of a to and fro with that one. I reckon, I mean, the bottom half we've nailed, which is cool. It's the top half that maybe now it will start to really twist and you will go, oh, that's interesting. My ninth is, I've been back and forth with this one throughout this this conversation. But I've decided to put in ninth spot Liverpool.
Okay, the gap. That is the biggest gap we've got between us.
Look.
To be fair, let me caveat by saying the only reason I've put Liverpool where I have is because, not because I think they've done amazingly in the window, but Mane's gone out and they've brought in Nunes and they've brought in Cavallo from Fulham. Do I think Nunes is the answer to Mane? No. Do I think that is massive, massive money for someone unproven in the Premier League and for one good season or two good seasons in Portugal? Yes. Do I think that will backfire? Yes. And do I think they've addressed the priorities in their squad, which is the midfield? Absolutely not. So I'm now talking myself out of why I've put
Liverpool. You have just given the exact reason as to why they are ninth for me, and yet now I'm interested that you've given all them reasons and you've got them wherever you've got.
Because to me on paper, they've done what they need. Like Mane out, one in, but again, they do need to refresh. But
I don't think they needed the Mane replacement personally. They got that in January, for me. They've got Salah, kept Salah, great. They've got Jota, Diaz. Why did they need Nunes? I mean, Firmino's going to stay, so I don't get it. I mean, they paid big money maybe for the future when Firmino goes, but Firmino doesn't even start. So maybe is he going to replace Salah in a couple of years? Probably. But then you bought in a player that is completely different to the current lineup that you have. You know, they're another team that don't have an out-and-out striker. For me, Liverpool should have been looking to, as you just said, that centre midfield. Because as of right now, this Liverpool centre midfield is close to not even, I mean, they are just, but I was going to say our borderline, other than Fabinho, being very close to not being top four worthy for me. They've got a great defence, if not the best defence. They've got a great front line, if not one of the best front lines. But it's like almost like FIFA, you know, a FIFA game where you have a five-star team that has like a 90-rated defence, a 90-rated lineup, but then their midfield is 70. I just think Henderson, Milner, Keita are just not worthy of, you know, yes, they're worthy of being backups, but Fabinho is an excellent midfielder, but Liverpool needed that other player that's in there. Off the top of my head, I mean, I just mentioned someone like your Declan Rice. Would have been a brilliant Jordan Henderson replacement.
The one for them, brilliant. That they'll never get because he's at Zed Club, because they're a similar rival. But the one for them, ironically, on paper, if he was actually just a Palace player and not attached to Chelsea, Conor Gallagher. He's ready made for Klopp.
I think Liverpool need fast that centre midfielder sorted out. And if they'd have, if personally they'd have not bought Darwin Núñez and spent 60 million on a midfielder of top quality, they would not have been ninth. They were one player away, and they still haven't fixed that. And I think that is a real, yeah, that's a bit of a concern for me. Especially when your challengers have upgraded without really selling anyone in said positions in two of them, you know, both midfield and striker. And I just think you missed out last season. You can't afford to miss out again. Your players are getting older every season. I'm just a bit, yeah. Defence, fine. Attack, fine. Midfield, no. And they haven't tackled that yet. So therefore, at this moment in time, they're ninth, which isn't a bad position to be in. Because as you say, Darwin Núñez could be a brilliant stroke of business. But did they really need him? So yeah, they're my ninth.
Massive money, that.
It's massive money. And we've seen some big, big money spent on Portuguese clubs before, and it hasn't worked out. So I remember Tottenham doing one. I can't remember if it was one from Porto, striker. We spent loads of money on him, and he didn't come out. There's been a few examples. The only one really late that's been successful is Bruno Fernandes. So we'll see. Eighth spot,
Brentford.
Correct. Bang on.
Like the youngster from Hull, they've brought in.
Very good player, and Hickey from Bologna.
Yeah, he's a very good player.
Another good player. Arsenal wanted him. The only big thing with Brentford is
Loss of Eriksen.
Yes. Yeah. With him, they were a different ball game. I know Lewis Potter is a talent, and he could be that creativity that they need, but he's not there right now. And you have to say, even with them two signings, Brentford are slightly weaker. Does that put them maybe in 14th spot, 15th spot next season? Maybe. Is that bad for Brentford? Absolutely not. But you can't overlook that they've lost Eriksen. Not that he was theirs to begin with, but he was, I mean, some of the goals came from him, didn't they?
Without them.
Yeah, potentially, yeah. My seventh spot is, and we're getting good now, you know, if you're up from here, seventh upwards, you're not doing too bad, but my seventh spot is Nottingham Forest.
Ooh, we are close, but my seventh spot was actually West Ham.
Look, Forest, the biggest spenders of the promoted clubs. A lot of names that go over my head, but I like the fact that, you know, some of these players that they've brought in aren't necessarily the ones that you know of. You know, they're not necessarily experienced players that they've grabbed from your Burnleys and everything. You've got a sign-in from Union Berlin, who, if no one knew, had a great Bundesliga last year, just sitting in the background, great team. They've got a player from Bayern Munich. Dean Henderson from Man United, I think, even though he's a loan signing, he's a brilliant, brilliant signing. Because for me, I know a lot of people don't overly rate him, but I think he is now one of the better goalkeepers for the lower half of the table.
Yeah, agreed.
When you look at every other club's goalkeeper in and around Nottingham Forest, I think Nottingham Forest can comfortably hold their hands up and go, I reckon we are out of the bottom 10, easily top five, easily for their goalkeeper. And it is so important to have a good goalkeeper. Look at Brighton. Sanchez carried that back line for a period, like when they were in trouble. Wolves could have gone down.
Yeah.
with their form, if they carried on. So I like it. The only one that I didn't think, you know, 18 million for Williams from Liverpool. I wasn't 100% certain on that signing, but they're having a go and I can't argue it. Do I think they're good enough? I honestly don't know because I don't know the players well enough. But as I said, they're having a go. The best player they lost in the team was Samba. because that was a bit of an up and down one. And they replaced him with just as good a goalkeeper.
Well, I'd say they upgraded on him, to be fair.
Potentially, yeah.
I
mean, he's not their permanent signing, but we're judging him on this year. So yeah, that's mine. So you'll talk about Forest in a bit. But you said your seventh was West Ham.
Yeah, basically for some, okay. I think they've done okay. They've done good business, and it'll probably just about, depending on other business they do, maintain roughly their top eight status. They've been linked with Scamacca from Italy today, which if they get someone like him, obviously they tried for Dan Juma, that doesn't look like it's happening now, but if they get an attacking player of that calibre in, then I think they'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. Sixth spot.
Well, I'll put mine out there. Sixth for me, Forest.
Wow, okay.
Again, much for the same reasons you said, but I actually think I'm really excited based on the signings they have made and Steve Cooper. I'm actually, given that Steve Cooper was heavily linked to the Palace job before Vieira, I'm really, really intrigued as a coach how he handles those players and the Premier League, because I actually think, and again, it's too early to tell because they've not been tried and tested in the Premier League, but I actually think their recruitment so far has been nothing short of genius. I think Henderson on loan from Man United to replace their goalkeeper that they obviously didn't plan to lose, I think is amazing. Nakate from Mainz, I think, is a brilliant signing from Bundesliga. Could have a similar output and impact as Mateta at Palace, because they're both, you know, kind of similar players, similar positions. Omar Richards, Palace are actually linked with him quite heavily initially as a centre-back option at Bayern Munich. And Neco Williams, whilst I think they've probably overpaid for him slightly, look, anyone that deals in Liverpool knows how much, you know, tough negotiators they are, but I think Cooper will probably get the best out of all of them. And they're not done yet, by all accounts. So good, solid recruitment, ready made for the Premier League, I think, for the most part, albeit unproven. And I think Forest will comfortably finish 12th or 13th this year. I think they'll do really well.
Well, mine's kind of gone under the radar because I don't know if you've clocked, but there's a certain team that I hadn't named yet. And in sixth spot, I actually had Palace.
Oh.
Yeah. For interesting reasons. Look, my reasoning for Palace being sick. Palace last season went through that massive turnaround for me. They brought in a lot of players who I didn't feel were ready yet, but nonetheless, they brought them in for future reasons, you know, and every year they go on, every year they're going to get better. So this season, that squad that was definitely one of the youngest squads, in terms of, you know, Elise, Eze, Gui,
even managers,
Mitchell, and yeah, you know, they're going to get better every year. So it's almost one of those squads where you're like, you know, they're almost bringing in a new player every season because their ability is going to be better. You know, they're just going to be ready and more hungry. Yes, they're obviously Gallagher's gone back, but I already mentioned that Gallagher in the first half of the season was not the same Gallagher in the second half of the season, and they almost had to adapt without Gallagher in the second half of the season. If he had done that all season, I probably would have been a bit more concerned, but nonetheless, he didn't. They kind of stepped up without him and got other players involved. I think Elise is going to have a bigger season anyway this year.
One player I didn't mention in midfield, by the way, but I think he's going to be the one to watch, is Eze. The fact...
That, me and you have had a back and forward on this before, where I'm not sold on that one just yet. I think it's raw, but I'm not sure.
I think last season, Palace and the management team had a stroke of genius, because I think in bringing in Conor Gallagher and having James McArthur and Schlupp rotating and that midfield combo and Kiarte, people forget that he had a massive interior ligament injury. And basically, the whole of last season, typical Palace would have had to have rushed him back and get him in like Zaha once upon a time. Quick, get your key player back. But actually, what goes under the radar is we used him quite sparingly last year. So he's had a whole year and a bit to get himself fit. And I know it's one pre-season game and, you know, a few training sessions over the thing, but his link up with Zaha on that left-hand side from the left centre midfield looked absolute, sharp to the core. And I think, at least, yes, like, everyone will improve, but the one player I'm telling you now that will have the biggest impact on that team coming into this season in terms of goal scoring and goal creation will be Eze.
We'll see. I mean, I'm not 100% on the Eze one yet. I've seen his talent. I know he's got it. I just haven't seen any signs of it yet. And maybe it's just a little unlock. We'll see. Decore, I like. Good player. I do think, you know, with Kiyata, I think a lot of people have completely missed the fact that Kiyata's gone, which was a shame. But I do think he is literally the most ideal mould you could get. It was almost like Vieira leaving Arsenal, not saying anything like this, but Vieira leaving Arsenal and Diaby came in and it was like, hang on, you got Vieira 2.0. Fortunately, it didn't pan out. Palace will be hoping Kiyata in a similar vein will be replicated. My only sort of iffy bit with Palace, but again, it's not anything to do with the transfer window, which is why I didn't penalise them for it, is what they're going to do up top. I was confused by the Edouard situation last year. Mateta showed glimpses. Do I think he's a 15-goal-a-season striker? No, I don't. Do I think Benteke is? No, it's too hot and cold. Edouard, I do, but we just kept in and out. It was just like they didn't know how to play with him. Do we get a hold-up player? Do we put someone on who's going to run, you know, off the back of the last man's shoulders and all that? And that needs to happen. They don't need to replace anyone up top because I think one of them's going to click, but I just think they need to know who that player is going to be. And surely the value's in Edouard. It has to be Edouard for me.
Interestingly, on that point, before this window, so before Kiyate leaving, our targets were ideally two centre mids, one centre back, because Vieira wants to go be able to be flexible with the back three, and a striker. But that striker was reliant on Benteke leaving, because he actually sees Edouard as a wide player, more of a wide player than a centre forward. Now, the problem with that is, and people say, oh, Edouard is harshly treated and stuff, and granted he made a quick start at centre-forward against Tottenham back in September that time, but what you've got to remember is, if Vieira brought him in to be a wide left player, well, his competitor is Wilfried Zaha, who got 14 goals last season. So, I think Zaha's got a year left on his contract. I don't think he'll leave in the summer because I do think Palace will just take the hit and let him run it down and then he'll get his move to wherever he ends up. But I don't think Edouard's done anything wrong. It's just that, unfortunately for him, his competition is Wilfried Zaha. And when you've got someone who's scoring 14 or 15 goals a season, it's a tough player to dislodge. So, I think he'll get his time, but just depends on the system, I think.
I think that's the biggie. They can't afford to lose Zaha, not now. So, you know, as long as that doesn't happen, if that does that change where they are in my table? Yes, it would. But so far, hasn't happened. So Palace, for me, sixth. I'm quite comfortable with that. I think they're going to improve next season. They already, you know, done better than I thought. It will scare a lot of Brighton fans with them being 14th in my table and Palace sixth. But that's my own opinion. Fifth spot.
Villa.
Ooh, right. Well, we know that this is going to get a bit tight now. My fifth spot is Arsenal. So we know we're very close here with a couple of teams because four of them we haven't mentioned as we're just about to mention. And we've got five spots left. So there's only one more surprise one for us both, I think. Okay.
For me, purely, obviously, they got Coutinho in. Diego Carlos came in from Sevilla. I'm not sold on him, to be honest, but I think they did well to get Olsen in from Roma as backup goalkeeper, or if he's there to start. And I think they stole the show early doors with getting you know, Kamara. I say.
What a signing that is for free.
And obviously they've just brought in Rory Wilson from Rangers and Augustinsson from Sevilla on loan as well. So look, for me, Coutinho and Kamara, great signings. Carlos, jury's out because I was questionable about him when Newcastle were linked with him. But on paper, you've got to say they've done a job. The key now is can Gerrard address the inconsistencies of last season and gel those individual players into a team and get the best out of the players in the positions they're meant to play. But yeah, on paper, they've done all right and they deserve to be fifth because they've got their business done. And that is mostly holding them up from that is securing Coutinho on the permanent. And then also, obviously, Kamara from Marseille was a very, 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 good piece of business. Obviously, they inflated their wages and financial offering, but for a club like Villa, they won't care. The fact that they've got him over the line is...
Yeah, I think it's great business. I think he's doing well in tackling that back line first, because I do think they were one of those teams that were very vulnerable. At the back, I think their back line was, centre-backs especially, with Mings and whatnot, was overrated. I didn't mind Konsa personally, and he was the one that was dumped for the others. And yeah, I didn't get it. Diego Carlos has been humming and hawing over whether he was carried by Kunda alongside him. But nonetheless, to get a player from Sevilla with that much experience in is great. A lot of ifs and buts with Coutinho. I didn't think they were going to... I thought he was using them as a makeshift, but now he's there permanently. You can't argue that, you know, Coutinho is a massive, massive signing for Villa. I think his performance in the latter half of the season will concern Villa fans, though, because he soon dropped off. But the Kamara free transfer signing, if he ends up being anything like people expect him to be, that is an absolute gem to keep an eye out for. So I can't argue what you're saying there. But Villa aren't my fifth team, so don't even know why I'm commenting on it, but hey-ho. Arsenal are mine. I think Gabriel Jesus is a brilliant signing. I think he is the perfect mould for Arsenal. I personally think he was harshly done by. A lot of people say, he's a Man City reject. I don't think the guy ever had a chance. There's not many strikers, in my opinion, that will be able to stand next to Aguero and then Haaland and live to tell the tale.
His goal scored to games played ratio is phenomenal, though.
He's brilliant. He's a brilliant player.
Natural born goal scorer. Get the ball to him and he will literally score you 20 goals a season.
Would I have had him at Spurs? Absolutely. Do I think he would have fit in at Spurs? No, simply because there's no way he was going to sign with Harry Kane there. I'm sorry, he just wasn't going to sign with Harry Kane there. So unfortunately, you know, it wasn't the right target for us. I like him though, I'm not going to deny. And I think Arsenal got a good deal as well, to be honest with you. And I do think if all signs point in the direction they're going, I do think he will pull it out of the bag. I think Man City have sold two massive players for them, you know, with Sterling and Jesus. But Man City, here they are, living to tell the tale, no doubt. My only concern with Arsenal, and the reason they're not, I say not high, I mean they're fifth. That's a good position to be in, probably where they might finish next season.
So they finished last season.
It is. I'm personally not convinced by the... Not that I'm not convinced. I mentioned this earlier that it doesn't always pan out with these kind of signings. I think they need to do a lot more in centre midfield than Fabio Vieira. And that is the reason why, for me, they're not breaking into that sort of the top four of the transfers, because 31 million is a lot of money to spend on him. I mean, let's be honest, could have spent another 30 million and they could have had Declan Rice, and then you would have said they are a massive upgrade.
As we're on the subject of Arsenal, because I'm not too far apart from you, so I'm just going to play it out, to be fair. So, Arsenal, so Villa I've discussed, I put as fifth. Now, Arsenal I put in third, mostly because of the early momentum they had with the links to Jesus, the links with the defender Martinez, who's now seemingly going to United. Arsenal Football Club in the transfer window the last two or three years, though, always baffle me. So going into this transfer window, whilst Jesus is a brilliant signing and he's a natural goal scorer, fantastic. Whilst Fabio Vieira could turn out to be a great signing from Porto, it's not their priority. I've always said with Arsenal, and I think genuinely pundits have always said, they miss that nasty, aggressive, winning Patrick Vieira mould-esque midfielder, one or two of those. They miss that massive kind of Sol Campbell, Tony Adams, Martin Keown type centre-back. And that they spent big money on Ramsdale and goal. But essentially, the spine of that team in midfield and defence is what they're missing. And for me, centre-forward aside, because they've obviously got rid of Lacazette and Aubameyang, so they did need a centre-forward this time. But did they need an attacking midfielder? I mean, Fabio Vieira or Smith Rowe? Same player. And if you look at Fabio Vieira, I'm not being funny, I think he's going to get bullied off the ball.
I could even accept them not buying any more defenders, to be honest with you, if they nailed down the Patrick Vieira, Gilberto Silva pairing.
Well, I'll tell you what, talking of centre-backs, Saliba being back for them will be massive, I think.
I think he will, yeah.
And if I was them, you drop Ben White. You get Saliba in there with Gabriel. Ben White, you drop him. That's your competition. That's what it's there for. Midfield, I don't know what's happening with Lucas Torreira. I think he's going to sign for Fiorentina. I still think there's a player in Lucas Torreira, but remains to be seen. But you're right. The big piece of that jigsaw now that's missing for Arsenal, which is why I don't need... They've got plenty of attacking players in their academy and stuff that could do the job of Fabio Vieira from Porto, but they need two shithouses in midfield. One that is Patrick Vieira-esque, and as you say, one that is Gilberto-esque. That's what they're missing. They got Partey in, he doesn't do it. They got Xhaka in, he doesn't do it. That 35 million, 40 million euros they spent on Fabio Vieira could have been spent on a decent pedigree. I mean, well, you look at Palace and we brought in that Doucouré, even someone like him.
Look, Arsenal, I said this last season and it still stands. I don't even think Arsenal's squad is top four. And that could include West Ham, if you even want it to include West Ham. Because I think West Ham's centre midfield is better than Arsenal's at this moment in time. Look, Odegaard's a good player. Smith Rowe's a good player. Vieira might be a good player. They're all the same fucking player.
Agreed. They're all attacking.
They've got Thomas Partey. Yes, look, we don't know what's going on with stuff. I don't even want to go there. He's a good player. When he's injury-free, he is a very good player. But Arsenal cannot afford to be going 15 games a season without him, because when he's not there, you are left with Lokonga and Xhaka. And I'm sorry, but they wouldn't even get in Leicester's centre midfield.
Lokonga is about to go out on loan, I think, or go out in...
Well, then that's another one, isn't it? It's just like... Look, you've got the Tielemans situation. If Arsenal could bring... It boggles my mind, right? But I will put it out there that if Arsenal this summer had signed Tielemans and Bissouma, I think they would have got top four easy. I'm actually, I would have sat there and gone, do you know what? I can see them giving Spurs still a run for their money here. I don't think Chelsea, until they started coming out with the players today, I think Chelsea were close to missing out on top four, to be honest with you. But just putting it in perspective, they are the two midfielders away like that of Tielemans and Bissouma-esque. And bearing in mind they were both on the market, it blows my mind that they didn't go in for Bissouma at least, and they haven't gone in for Tielemans anymore than what we've already heard.
For the price they paid for Vieira, they could have got Doucouré and Tielemans for an extra 50. So, you know, 40 million euros, 45 million euros would have got you Tielemans and Doucouré, and that would have been then complete, I think.
Well, Spurs saved themselves 5 million on that Vieira transfer getting Bissouma in. Like, I'm not saying it had to be Bissouma. It didn't, not just because Spurs bought him. It needs to be a Bissouma-esque. Look, Arsenal were always known for having a great centre midfield, shithouses, all sorts. And they haven't had it for years, like years. And that is the one piece of the puzzle they've never fixed. And I guarantee you, the day they fix it, it will be like, oh, look how good we are again. It's like, oh, fucking hell. Like, how stupid are you?
The minute they fix that, it will be their back.
Their centre-backs will be, fucking hell. Honestly, they've done this for years, haven't they? They've done it for years.
They've always...
Since the Invincibles, unfortunately, they've always been a position out.
Well, have you always noticed with Arsenal, the last few years it seems to be up front and attack, no problem. Invest in it, they always do relatively well when it's attacking midfielders and strikers and wingers. When it comes to defence, goalkeeper and midfield, because it seems like they just expect to win games via their attack. But you need that spine, you need that solid Premier League spine. James Ward-Prowse, he's only got a year left on his contract, isn't he? Surely a £20 million bid, £25 million bid gets in if you're Arsenal.
And I mean, the Calvin Phillips one, obviously he went to Man City, but I mean, they could have at least, we don't know if they did, they could have at least knocked on the door earlier and just seen if that was even an option. It probably wouldn't have been. But you see these players going in and around to different clubs and I'm just like, oh my God. I mean, I'm delighted. Don't get me wrong. Because it's so obvious to me. You know, just like everyone was saying about the back line for so long. Why are we buying Pepe when we need a back line? Last year, they tackled the back line. They got closer to the top four than they ever have. This year, we're saying, you still haven't fixed your midfield. I wouldn't be surprised. Come May next year, they're in the same boat. Anyone. Just anyone. Anyone better than what they've got. And they could have been top of this.
They could have had Guimarães, but you went to Newcastle.
And he shithoused them and all. Yeah, they're two midfielders away from being a lot higher. My fifth spot was Newcastle, funny enough. Not just because of obviously who they bought, but the fact that they haven't tried to do what we were worried they were going to do and start being this club that buys everyone in the hope that throwing shit at the wall eventually sticks. They seem to have a bit of a plan as to what they're doing. You know, they've spent... They've got massive owners in there and we knew they couldn't go all out and spend a shitload. But I mean, let's be honest, they probably spent a lot less than I thought they might have anyway. Target was just a confirmation of what they were going to do anyway. Nick Pope, I think, is a brilliant upgrade. Another club that have instantly multiplied their ability in goal. Botman, I think, is a great signing. Yes, there's questions as to whether, but to be honest, if Spurs had signed Botman this year, I'd have probably been quite happy with it just because I think there's definitely signs he's got it. How long have we been saying that these clubs have been buying these players at centre-back and they're not going to cut it and we've been proved wrong multiple times? You know, Van Dijk, Ruben Diaz, you can name them all. I think defenders have just completely changed. The agile defenders seems to be the way forward. Palace last year, Christensen and Gui, it worked. It's just the type of centre-backs that you have now. There's not many shithouses around. Fortunately, we do have one. I think so far their business is decent. I honestly think that they're in a good position and, you know, I expect them to sign more. So at the moment, I would say they have upgraded three positions, and you can't argue that, and none have gone so far anyway. That's my fourth spot. Who's your fourth spot?
Oh, it's Liverpool, isn't it? But I've...
Okay, fair enough.
Like that's stupid. But that's purely one for one.
Fair, fair. Do you think it's one for one, though, really?
Well, I don't, because I think the value in that transfer for Nunes is shit. I don't actually think he's going to be... I think he'll flop.
How much do you think Liverpool will miss Mane?
Massively. Oh.
Do you think even with Jota and Diaz probably fill in the gap?
Mane pulled away three players at a time because it was just a pain in the arse. Like, Palace, he used to always score. He's quick. Now you see me, now you don't. He's a pain in the arse. I don't get that vibe of Nunes. I'm not convinced. And the fact that they've spent near on 85 million quid, I'm not having it. I think Nunes will be the flop of the season. I don't think he's got it in.
Nunes will be a flop and Liverpool of Jane Jason's fourth spot.
I do. I think he'll flop. I think he will flop.
Fair. I'm not convinced. I don't think he'll be in the top five goal scorers this season.
He's had one and a half good seasons at Benfica, but he's before that and during that, he's had a range of kind of injury problems and stuff. His first touch is not great. Like, if you want to talk about weaknesses, he hasn't got a great first touch. I'm not convinced. And that is massive, massive money. £85 million.
You've given reasons for Liverpool being in the bottom half of this transfer table. I don't get it. And you've got them in fourth.
I don't get it either. I always have to do something stupid, don't I?
Of course you do. And you'll turn round at the end of the season and go, see, that's why I had Liverpool in fourth in the transfer, because Nunes was brilliant.
But their midfield is a massive concern. Like you said.
Yeah, it is. That is big. It is a big, big concern in midfield.
James Milner. Really?
Yeah.
Who's never hit it off either, by the way. So
never. Third spot?
Third, Arsenal.
Cool. I probably wouldn't disagree either that, you know, I just think, yeah. I'm assuming you're going to say that's on the basis that Jesus is just such a good signing.
Well, that and the fact early doors, it seemed like they were going to get Jesus, they were going to get this Martinez. Mm. There was a lot of kind of early furor and then it's just petered out a bit. So, had I revisited that placement last week, I probably would have put him down to fifth, like you. But, you know, Jesus is a decent signing. And in him, they've got a ready-made replacement for Aubameyang and Lacazette. So, and for the money they signed him for, you can't really say fairer than that, to be fair. Look, when you think about the fact that Haaland and Jesus combined have cost about 85 million quid in today's market, two strikers of that calibre, granted agent fees and wages and all that kind of stuff go on top of it, but face value, brilliant.
There have been some bargains this window. When you look at Haaland, Jesus, Sterling, there have really been some bargains in the window. My third was Villa.
Okay,
not far from you. Again, for reasons I said earlier, I just think it's a good... Steven Gerrard is tackling that position first, the back line, and I think he's right to do so. I think they've always had a good sign that attacking-wise they can score goals. I just think he needs that attacking front line to sort of start clicking when we talk about your Buendias, your Coutinhos, your Watkins. They just need to gel. Something needs to click. And I think they've got that potential that they don't maybe need to try and fix it yet. If it doesn't work this season, maybe. But there's no point getting that to work and then you're still leaking goals. So I think it was a good choice for him to start at the back. And then we come to the top two. And it looks like we're both nailed on with those two teams. Unless I've forgotten you've mentioned them somewhere else. But I'm pretty certain I would have heard one of them. It's just what way round we have them.
Yep, Norwich in second.
Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. So, to my knowledge, you will have both Spurs and Man City as your one and two in any particular order, same as me.
Correct.
And who is your number one?
Spurs.
Interesting, because my number one is actually Man City.
Interesting.
So, obviously, we're not going to say like one's worse than the other, because to be top two, you've got to be doing pretty well. So we can talk about them side by side, because it's, you know, I've already stated Man City are my number one, Spurs are my number two. Jason has them the other way around, Spurs at number one, Man City at number two. So where do we start?
I'll start.
Okay, go for it.
So the reason Spurs are top and City is second for me is, one, clearly Conte had key positions. Yeah, key positions that he wanted filling. And to all intents and purposes, so far, he's got those key positions sorted. Do I agree with the big money fee of Richarlison? I don't, because I think he's overrated. But, as you rightly pointed out, would a striker of, say, Sterling or Jesus' quality come in to play second fiddle to him? Probably not. And if you're Sterling, you're not going to get ahead of Son or Kulusevski, to be fair, because he came in and did the job. And, yeah, he's picked out key positions. There's obviously a couple more positions. Jed Spence is ongoing, but I'm sure that'll get sorted in true Daniel Levy style. I don't see that being an issue.
Yeah, soon. I think it's soon from what I'm hearing.
Player wants the move. The centre-back signing from Barca, a bit of an odd one because it was a loan signing. But to be honest, I saw your point on that on Twitter at the time. But then I think that was a step back to say, look, our key target was Bastoni from Inter. Clearly, that's not going to happen. We'll maybe put him on the back burner until next season when he's got only a year left on his contract. So let's just get someone in that can do the job and has got a point to prove. If they have got a point to prove, it helps Barca out, because Barca will probably, if he has a good season, they'll probably try and sell him. And I think Spurs probably didn't commit to your point as well that I saw you flag on Twitter as well about a buyback clause. Probably didn't bother because they know that they're a predominant target. But look, you get a player in that's got a point to prove in the biggest league in the world. He's good on the ball. And let's face it, Conte teams in terms of centre-backs have always been about being good on the ball, getting it out to wing-backs. And he'll do the job. And there's backup at the moment, if memory serves me correct, for left centre-back to him, you'd have
Ben Davies.
So it's not a bad scenario. Maybe a worse scenario if you hadn't fixed your midfield problem, but you've recruited a midfield. So, and I mean, look, I don't mean to be kind of Mystic Meg over here, but I categorically said last season, if Harry Kane does not leave last summer, he will stay at Spurs and see out his career. It's happening. It is happening. He ain't going.
The guy is like,
and he will get.
Everyone is highlighting how happy he is at this moment in time.
He will sign a new. He's not going anywhere now. Real Madrid missed the chance. They missed out on Mbappe and Haaland, and they're not going to go for Harry Kane now. And I tell you now, I said it not to lick Spurs' arse on this pod all season long when Conte came in. Spurs will be in the top three this season. I think you heard it here first again. Nunes is going to flop to shit. Liverpool aren't going to recruit midfield. Spurs will be the new Liverpool this coming season.
I have currently, based on the transfer window so far, and this is with squad included and manager, so this isn't just a transfer window, I have Spurs finishing third behind Man City and Liverpool. I think Chelsea will drop out, start slipping. I think, as I've already alluded to, I think as long as Arsenal don't recruit in centre midfield, they're staying where they are with Chelsea. I do think we are going to break away. I'm not even going to throw it out there. You know, to have Bissouma, Bentancur and Højbjerg in centre midfield as your options for holding, you've got it as good as it gets with shithousing.
I think the only thing at the minute for me, outsider looking in, that Spurs might be missing is that
it's the creative midfielder.
Exactly that.
Now, and that is our next. That is our next. So when, from what I gather, Jed Spence will be wrapped up in the next week or two, from what I hear. Then it's two luxury signings from here on, where Spurs will decide, depending on how the market goes, whether they're happy to wait or whether there's a too good to turn down deal. And from what I hear, it will be evaluating those luxury signings as another centre back. And that could be Pau Torres if Lo Celso goes to Villarreal, depending on how that works. And the creative midfielder, and the one they're eyeing up, and funny enough, they've not done any business yet, is Maddison.
That wouldn't surprise me, because Leicester are in a position pretty much where they need to sell to buy.
Maddison and Tielemans would bring in 100 million plus for Leicester. So I would keep a very, very close eye on that one, because it's very odd that Leicester haven't bought any players yet. And it could be because they don't know what they want to do in terms of, do we take the hit this season, which I think they should. I think they're too far behind now with the squad they've got to keep up with the rest. I think West Ham are going to go past them. I think this is the time to cut your losses and rebrand. And Maddison and Tielemans would do that. And they could keep the rest. I mean, it's the perfect time to do it. And Madison's just come off a great tail end to last season where he's probably added an extra 10 million on. Look, the Richarlison signing, I agree. Do I think he's worth that money? No. Is he as good as you could get for someone that's happy to potentially play 30 games a season, but in multiple different positions, whether it's Kulusevski's win, whether it's Son's win or Kane's win? Yes, he's probably as versatile and as good as it gets. Do I think Conte could elevate him to another level? Yes, I do, because he's got that shithouse attitude. And I'm guaranteeing it now, Spurs will be one of, if not the most hated clubs next season. Conte is turning them into absolute fuckheads, like Romero, Bentancur, Højbjerg, Richarlison, Son. I mean, I don't even want to think, and Conte, I don't even want to think how hated we're going to be. But that's what he wants to do. And I don't know if you've seen their pre-season videos, but he is burning them.
He's killing them.
Absolutely killing them, to the point where Harry Kane and Son are nearly throwing up. So it is a ruthless environment at the moment, but he doesn't want to set 11. He wants everyone playing for one another. And if Conte's happy with Richarlison, I'm happy with Richarlison. I'm not going to lie.
That's my it's big money. But again, as I said earlier, it's not your money to worry about, is it?
It's not my money. And the other thing is, a lot of people are saying, why would you buy that for Richarlison when you can get Jesus for 10 million less? Jesus is on the Brazil bench because of Richarlison.
Yeah, but again, not only that as well, Jesus left Man City because he was second fiddle. He'd be second fiddle at Spurs because he's not getting ahead of Son or Kane or Kulusevski.
No, exactly. And I think Arsenal will be more creative flair than Spurs next season. I think you're going to see a different side to Spurs next season where they're going to be very good at the basics. Whereas we've been always used to, of late, of seeing them do... Don't get me wrong, they're going to have magical moments where they've got great players in there, Son and all them. They're going to be brilliant. But the one downfall that Arsenal are going to have is that shithousing mentality that Spurs have now got. And when it comes to a North London derby and whatnot, or any derby, anyone with shithouse players will eclipse the creative flair. It's reality. I'm sorry. You're not going to go about it any other way. Man City, then. You have them in second. I have them in top. To put it bluntly, why I have City in top? How can they not be when they've just upgraded from Jesus to Haaland. They brought in Calvin Phillips and haven't even sold anyone in centre midfield. And, you know, yes, they've lost Sterling. Do I think they're still good enough? Yes, I do. But, yeah, I just... Whereas Nunes is potentially risking the flop, I just can't see Haaland flopping. I just really can't.
I've put them second. As you say, Haaland brilliant. I don't deny that. Haaland brilliant. I do not deny that. But I look at their squad, and if you look at their attacking players, Julian Alvarez, who I think actually will be brilliant, Haaland and Riyad Mahrez. That will be their front three going into the season. Now, I know he varies it, because then you've got Phil Foden, Bernardo Silva and Grealish, who are registered as midfielders, but are probably more likely to be attacking players. But I'll be honest with you, outside of that, an aging Gundogan, they've got Rodri, obviously Fernandinho's left, and then you've got Calvin Phillips. And I hate to upset the apple cart here, but I don't rate Calvin Phillips. I don't. I think he's bang average. Calling him the Yorkshire Pirlo, and oh, he's going to be this, that, and the other. He's going to be another Jack Grealish. I think he's shit. I think he's dog shit.
I quite like him, to be honest. Saying he's a Yorkshire Pirlo is going way too far. He's a very good Leeds United centre midfielder. Do I think if Arsenal had bought him, that would have been one of their problems solved? Yeah, I do, actually. I do think he would have plugged that gap. Clearly, Pep sees something in him. Interesting to think where he's going to fit, though, because Rodri has got to be their main one in that position. If Bernardo Silva stays, I can't see him being shifted out. And he's not a De Bruyne-type player. So is he going to be another Nathan Ake kind of signing, or is he going to break himself into that team?
Part of me is cynical here and just said they've got Calvin Phillips, by the way, because of the whole homegrown quota as well. I don't think he's necessarily there to be a piece of the jigsaw. It's just another tick box exercise at decent value, because 40 million in today's market for a decent backup. I don't know. I'm not convinced. I actually think for City, depending on Julian Alvarez and how he gets on, but if he flops, I'm banking on the fact that Grealish flops. So then you look at it, Aguero out, Jesus out, Ferran Torres out, and you're left with them two. It's a bit like, I'm not convinced. Having said that, I'm not convinced on, as I've documented, Liverpool's trailblaze either. So I still think they'll be ahead of Liverpool. But I just think, in transfer window terms, between the two, Tottenham and City, Haaland, brilliant. Julian Alvarez, potentially brilliant. Calvin Phillips, okay, he adds a bit of depth. But I think Spurs have got the balance right. City, I think they'll live to regret that Sterling one. I do. I think unless Foden comes in and starts playing regularly all of a sudden, then it could be different. But I do think they'll regret that Sterling one. But Haaland, you're right. I think he'll smash it. I do not see Haaland flopping. I can't. If he flops in the Premier League, it will be the single biggest downward slant of a player's career ever. But he's got the physique, he's got the presence, he's got the attributes. I don't see it.
With Man City doing what they've done, do you still see them winning the league?
I think they'll grind it out. I think it'll be tough, but I think they'll win it because whereas Liverpool could rotate quite comfortably, I don't think Liverpool have the plan B options at their disposal, at their disposal, like they have done previously. I think that's the only reason. But I'll tell you now, Spurs are the ones to watch this season. They are absolutely the ones to watch this season. I think Spurs are better placed in midfield than Liverpool. Then when you take into account front three, Spurs front three, you'll give any team, so City or Liverpool run for their money. Yeah, Liverpool have Salah. Yes, they have Diaz. Yes, they've got Nunes. Yes, City have Alvarez. Yes, they've got Haaland. And yes, they've got Mahrez. But you're telling me that you wouldn't rather Son over Mahrez? I would. Mahrez only does well in that team because the space is created for him, because there's 10 other players that can drag people back. But I'd rather Son. Would I rather Haaland or Kane? Okay, I'd probably rather go Haaland.
But you don't know what Haaland's going to do yet. It's the difference exactly. Whereas Kane does it.
So I actually think Spurs are quite even keel when it comes to... If you take front three and midfield three, assuming 4-3-3, midfield and strike force, I don't think Tottenham are too far away from Liverpool or from City.
Then it's just at the back.
Then it comes to backline, where I think... Well,
the other one you forgot to mention, by the way, with Spurs, was what do you think of Perisic?
Great signing. Brilliant. People talk about his age. He's been doing it for Inter Milan for the past 3 or 4 years, no problem. He'll play left
wing. Yeah, it's an interesting... He is the left wing back. Regulon, Regulon's going.
You watch him pinging balls to Harry Kane. You watch him, the way they play, with the wing backs pushing forward, on that left-hand side, Perisic pinging in crosses to Harry Kane. Yeah, all right, I'll have some of that. Or playing in balls on the left.
There is no way that Conte signs Perisic at left wing back in the Premier League at 33 if he doesn't think that guy can move like he's 29.
Well, not only that, don't underestimate not just the outfield play of Perisic, set pieces, corners, free kicks, Perisic all day long.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean,
I'll say this now. If Perisic is on corners for Spurs next season, Spurs will be one of the top teams in terms of goal scoring from set pieces.
Well, he will be. He'll be the in-swinger on the left side for sure. Yeah, it's good to see that we were pretty much in line, to be fair, barring a few. So that is our transfer window roundup. A good long session. Back and forward regarding that, and we will see in a couple of weeks where we're at with the final squads, I guess, and then we will have to start previewing where we think teams will actually finish in the league, which I'm sure will be very interesting in the presence of Cookie and Cossie. But that is episode 53 done. No add-ons needed for this episode. We wanted to just keep it transfer focused. Chase, anything more to add before we sign off there?
All good.
All right, mate. Well, in that case, we will... you will join us for episode 54 next time, where, as I said, we will start our part one of the Premier League preview. And hopefully, we will be joined by the rest of the gang for that episode. So keep an ear out for that. But in the meantime, it's good night from me.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to Total Football Debate Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. It would mean the world to us if you could spread the word regarding our show and leave us a rating so we know how we're doing. Also, please, please, please interact with us on social media, especially on Twitter at TFDebate, where we'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions on any of the topics we discuss each week. You never know, we may even get you on the show to say hello. Thanks again for listening, and keep an ear out for the next episode.